you know, you feel like you owe your community, because I also feel that I've been given chances that many people don't get. And, you know, I get asked to speak a lot, especially the question of how did an immigrant reach where you did? And yeah, I think you do carry a sense of responsibility there.
Hello and welcome to the Women of the Future podcast, a podcast made in collaboration with the Women of the Future program, a platform built to unlock a culture of kindness and collaboration among leaders, as well as support and celebrate the successes of women. I'm Kim Rowell and I won the media category at their awards in 2018 in recognition of my continued work as a commissioner, producer and children's author, particularly within the mental health remit. I'll be talking to my guests on this podcast about their careers, who or what gave them their first big break, their successes, failures and inspirations along the way, and how they came to be a part of the Women of the Future network. Preetha Mehra is Chief Information Officer at the United States Postal Service, describing the role as a privilege to oversee one of the world's largest and most critical technology infrastructures. Throughout her near 34-year career with the organisation, Preetha has honed a breadth and depth of expertise across a range of verticals, from marketing to technology, and is frequently asked to steward critical change that transforms people, processes and products. An admired and respected speaker on digital transformation, AI, analytics, cloud and security, as well as holistic business, digital and cloud transformation, Preetha has provided a guiding light for many, many others in her industry.
I grew up in Calcutta, which is now Kolkata, which is a teeming metropolis of over 17 million people in India. And I grew up in a very strong extended family structure with an Eastern upbringing. So there's a big focus on community and responsibility and respect. And I'm one of three sisters and a brother. And my father was very focused on ensuring that his girls, in addition to his son, got the best education he could afford. So he got us admitted into Loreto House, which is an all-girl Catholic school. And it's sort of very well-regarded in Calcutta. And it's celebrated not only for its academic excellence, but also for instilling a very holistic physical, mental, and moral education to its pupils. And it had a very strong social mission. So, you know, it's about happiness is not what you get, but what you give. And so we had a very strong duty to understand and process the needs of the communities around us. And we built very strong bonds because, you know, you were with the same class from kindergarten to 12th grade. And I have to say, we emerged as pretty empowered women.
So were you quite receptive to that learning environment? Were you a diligent student? Did you apply yourself? What was the academic version of you like?
I was an academic truant. So I tended to break all the school rules, but I loved learning. English and history were my favorite subjects. And so I did a lot of reading in my youth. And we had some really great teachers. And actually, the principal of our school, Sister Cyril, she's an icon in Calcutta. She went on to do many, many great things after she left her principalship at Loreto House. But one of the things that I remember is that she started this rainbow program with the poor in Calcutta, where she brought in the underprivileged kids who couldn't afford an education. She gave them lodging, stay, and education. So she was really amazing.
And when did technology come into it for you? Because at the moment, in your career, you oversee one of the world's largest technology infrastructure. And I was reading this and it blew my mind slightly, because it spans five national deployment and solution centers, 37,000 network locations, 20,000 servers, and more than 950 applications on more than 115,000 devices. And 90 petabytes. I don't even know what a petabyte is, but that just sounds extraordinary. So when did technology come into it? Were you minded in that way at school, or did something spark your interest to make you go down that route?
Actually, that's a really great question. When I was in my high school years and, you know, my kindergarten, middle school years, English and literature was everything that turned me on. And then I came to this country and I went to the University of Maryland to do my undergrad. And even then, when I really struggled with my career path. I was not one of those students that knew exactly what they wanted to be and exactly what subjects to pursue. And faintly, I thought it was going to be, you know, journalism and writing as a career. And it's really funny. I attended my first essay writing class, and I was the only immigrant in the room at the time. And after one of our essay writing assignments, the teacher, a very tough professor, she came in, she turned on her projector, and she put my essay on, and she read it to the class. And while she's extolling the virtues of my essay, I was cringing. I was like, oh my goodness, everyone's going to know it's me because it was written about the Sherpas of Nepal. And I was like, oh my God. And then she came to me at the end of the lesson and she said, what is your major? And right then and there, I very quickly and decisively said, computer science. And she said, oh, what a waste. And she walked away. And I, you know, I guess I made that choice at the time because I really was seeking career security. I was a bit risk averse. And then I think I was also thinking, since I was an immigrant in the country, you know, my language and my vocabulary is different and maybe I wouldn't be accepted. And I felt that I didn't have the imagination and the rich experiences that writers need. So that's when I went into computer science.
That's so interesting. Did you always know that you wanted to study in the States as well? Was that always like a rite of passage for you?
Not really. I sort of came here on a personal journey. And so I started my schooling here. But now once I came, I stayed.
And is there any other, obviously you're talking there about lecturers who advocated for you. Has there been any other standout moment or maybe another person in particular that you would say helped mould your interests potentially away from the English and the history and set you off into what you're doing now? Has there anyone been more of a guiding light in that way?
Actually, I would say not really, because I pretty independently selected computer science because I felt that it was going to be an easy profession to make a living. Because at the time it was a growing profession and there were very few women in computers at the time. So I sort of picked it because I thought from a future perspective and from a career perspective that it would be smooth sailing. Yeah. And it has been pretty easy, you know, because it's a very wanted field.
And you've actually worked now for the United States Postal Service for nearly 34 years, which is almost unheard of. I remember seeing something on LinkedIn the other day about the CEO, I think it is, of Pret, who started as a barrister and now is the CEO. But you don't hear so much about legacy careers anymore. You don't hear about people sticking with the same company necessarily for such a long duration. I suppose my question is, what's made you stay and what's kept you with the company?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually started my career once I graduated from computer science. I worked in about 2-3 companies as a software developer. And then I sort of took the job as a consultant developing software for the Postal Service. And then they offered me a job and I took it. And I have to say that my career kind of just winded and wielded its way. There was not a lot of deliberation. I liked my work. And then what's great about the Postal Services is that it's a huge organization and you're able to jump from discipline to discipline fairly easily. So I started out as a software developer. And then after about 6 years, I wanted to have a higher impact job. And so I actually had them send me to MBA school. I went to Georgetown and I did an executive MBA. And that was pretty pivotal in my career because when I came back, I had sort of outgrown the job that I had. And I was very keen on learning more about the business of the Postal Service. So I jumped on and took on a career in marketing. And I spent several years in product development, marketing, sales. And then after doing that, I went back into technology, but sort of marrying marketing and technology to develop infrastructures and products that would help our customers. And from there, I became the VP of IT and then on to becoming the CIO. But I think I stayed because, one, I really like the mission of the service. It's a great place to grow. It's a very trusted and esteemed organization. And I've had a very varied career, although I've been only with one institution. And I don't think I could have achieved what I have had I not stayed. Because, you know, you stay, you learn, you grow. And I got a very wide breadth of experience, which now helps in the job that I'm in.
And it's an evolution as well, isn't it? Because you oversee one of the world's largest and most critical technology infrastructures, but it's transforming, right? In the digital space, in the AI space. So you must have to constantly evolve and adapt and, you know, really consider where you're going and how your company and organization needs to keep up with all of these new technologies. Is that the case?
Absolutely. So, you know, that's what's fun about my current role as the CIO is because one is that we are undergoing a massive transformation. Our Postmaster General has actually published a Delivering for America plan, which is a 10-year plan. And the critical strategy in all of this is modernization. Mm. And it's modernization of everything. So we're literally modernizing, you know, our payroll systems, our logistics systems, our customer interfacing systems, our visibility systems. And we have to stay abreast of what's going on in the marketplace because it's a very competitive logistics marketplace now. And so that's what's really exciting about my career is it's continual learning. And it's not just for me, it's for my team. We have promoted and are continuing to promote a very strong learning environment in our organization. It's something that I really pride myself in having done so that we can embrace these new technologies, keep abreast with these new technologies, and generally bring in those solutions. But that'll keep us competitive and that'll, you know, promote really strong solutions for the organization.
And you speak about the pride that you take in that. But I mean, across all the work you've done, it's been such an illustrious career for you. Is there any one thing in particular that you would say stands out or that you do get more pride from potentially?
I think if I was to talk about, you know, my accomplishments, I think the fact that I reached the C-suite of such a large organization, being an immigrant, is something that I really am happy about. I'm also very happy and proud about the teams that I've built, the people that I've developed, the culture of learning that I've built. And I've had a very broad exposure to the best and the brightest in the industry. And so I've been honored to keynote at some pretty influential technology conferences. And, you know, that aside, I've had the opportunity to work on some really amazing projects, like the latest one we did was delivering COVID test kits throughout the country at a very short notice. And, you know, we were all very honored to be part of that program. And then also, I've been not only recognized within the Postal Service, but by the industry, which I feel is quite the privilege. So, yeah, I have to say that this has been a really fun and fulfilling career for me.
And do you feel any kind of burden of responsibility in that? Because we talk a lot on this podcast about mentors and the value in, you know, you can't be what you can't see. And like you say, to have reached the C-suite, not only as a woman, but as an immigrant and from your, maybe from even from a cultural heritage point of view, do you feel any kind of, oh, I've got to try harder or I'm trying to forge the way here? Is there any burden on you in that way?
I think so, because, you know, I represent the immigrants, I represent the women, I represent the cultures that I came from. My father was probably the hardest working man I know. He had two sayings. He said, a job worth doing is worth doing well. And the second thing he always said was, an idle mind is a devil's workshop. Mm-hmm. And he really taught us to be courageous and sort of gave us a sense of unlimited potential. And my mom was, on the other hand, very, very encouraging and a very resilient lady. She taught us resilience. And so, you know, I feel like there's a sense of responsibility to really carry on that bastion of achievements. My husband is also the most encouraging person I know. He's one of my biggest champions, but I do have some critics as well, my son, but yeah, so, you know, you feel like you owe your community, because I also feel that I've been given chances that many people don't get. And, you know, I get asked to speak a lot, especially the question of how did an immigrant reach where you did? And yeah, I think you do carry a sense of responsibility there.
How do you answer that question? I wouldn't ever put that question to you, but how would you answer that question?
Well, I think it was, in my case, it was a lot of hard work. Mm. I, no matter what job I was given, I kind of lived up to my dad's motto, is that I always put in my best. And then the other thing that I learned was that when you've outgrown where you are, then take some conscious steps to move on and to do something else that drives you. And the third is to really love what you do, because if you don't like what you do, then it becomes a chore. And my work has never been a chore for me. It's always an academic exercise. You know, it's always solving a problem or driving the company's mission. So the other thing that I've really enjoyed is, I mean, you know, there's two types of leaders. There are those Elon Musks and Steve Jobs that are visionary, courageous, risk takers, unrelenting passions for pushing boundaries. And then you have leaders that focus on developing employees and building learning organizations. And I try to strike a balance between the two, where you sort of allow people and empower people to reach their full potential, promote a culture of freedom, but also one of responsibility and driving results. And I think that's important in the leadership realm, you know, and that's, I think, what helped me get the next promotion and the next promotion. It was always making sure that you are driving the company's mission, but also developing your teams, because as you step up, it's not about you, it's about your people, because they are your biggest asset.
And in my mind, that kind of approach would command the most amount of respect as well from your employees, which is integral, isn't it, to any kind of leadership or management?
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you that I can't say I'm an impeccable leader. You know, I've got a lot to learn. My team will tell you that I drive hard, but I'm very fair. You know, I've only recently learned, and I think some of it I've got from my husband, who's always taught me about the praise sandwich. You know, how do you inspire your employees? For me, empowering and recognizing is really important. And then we've also, in my organization, done a lot for building a learning culture. So we really encourage people to take courses, to grow. We do things called tech chats, where we invite experts from the field to talk to them. So we really energize the core, because they're really excited about the mission and also the capabilities that we've brought in. Because once you work in a modern technology at the Postal Service, it's at an unprecedented scale, and people really enjoy that.
And just shifting tact here slightly, but how did you first hear about the Women of the Future program and the work that they do?
Actually, I met Pinky through Junie. Junie is a school friend of mine. I've known her from Calcutta days. When I came to this country, we bumped into each other and then we became fast friends. And whenever Pinky visited Junie, I met her. I was very, very impressed with the work she did. Both on the Women of the Future Awards, I particularly loved the ambassador programs and all the mentoring that she's brought into the culture there. I just think it's just great, the work that she's done.
Right, to finish with, I could talk to you all day. Obviously, we don't have time for that. But to finish with, I have some quick fire questions, if you're ready.
Sure.
Here we go. What would you describe as your greatest success?
I think my journey to the CIO for the Postal Service would be one of my pinnacle achievements. I think the efforts that I've put in to get here and the organizations that I've built sort of been always harnessed to drive transformations. And I think I've done a lot of that in the organization. So I feel like I'm proud of the legacy I will leave behind.
And what would you describe as your greatest failure?
Well, I think one of my greatest failures was a run-in I had with one of my managers way back when I was in the engineering group. I was a little more fiery then. And I was a program manager and leading a group of people. And one of our consultants, who was one of my top contributors, his company had raised his rates. And so I went to my boss and said, "You got to increase my budget." And he said, "Sorry, Preetha, we have no more money and you'll just have to get rid of the guy." And I should have accepted his decision. I didn't. I sort of, blew out and said, "I think that you need to let me have this guy and that, I'm not going to be able to achieve." And so he essentially after that sidelined me. And it was probably the best thing he did for me, because that was the time when I also felt that I had sort of done all I could do at the level I was. And that's when I decided to jump ship and go into the marketing and the business realm. So in a way, it was pretty disturbing for me, the breakup of the relationship, because I really did admire him. Mm. And I think it was a lesson for me, because it taught me how to, how to work with people. And I clearly blamed myself for it. And so I think I've always been that as one of my failed relationship moments. But I used it, I thought of mom and said, "I got to come out of this. I got to be resilient. I got to move on." And I did. And it taught me a lot. It taught me how not to interact, for sure.
Also potentially serendipity at play, because you changed tact and went off in a different direction and got to where you are now. So maybe these things are sent to try us, aren't they? And when you're challenged, you grow, even if it's in quite difficult, challenging circumstances.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where you had it. I had a negative situation, but it was a tremendous learning for me, really was.
Now, the mantra of Women of the Future is kindness and collaboration. What does that mean to you in both your personal and professional life?
That's an interesting question. So in my professional life, in a corporate and organizational context, I think kindness and collaboration to me means empowerment, inclusion, trust, listening, and allowing people to contribute as their authentic selves. Allowing people to fulfill their personal objectives along with their career objectives, and promoting a growth culture to enable people to shine and give them a sense of connectedness. And both in my personal and in my public life, I think being sensitive to the needs of folks, being aware, giving people space, acknowledging the value of individuals. I mean, I think that to me is kindness and collaboration. And on the collaboration side, that's one thing I really work on at work, which is promoting a team culture to encourage diversity of thought, which always leads to stronger solutions.
I want to come and work for you, Preetha. Sounds cool. It sounds fantastic. Is there anything that scares you?
Oh yeah, retirement.
Do you think that's on the cards? No time soon.
I don't think I can ever retire. But I think about what I should and do next, in my next walk of life. And I think I want to have another meaningful second career.
Okay.
And to me, that's really important. So I've done a lot of thinking, you know, and we'll see. We'll see where we go.
This leads me nicely on to the final question. What's left on your to-do list?
Well, at work, I think developing and mentoring. I've begun doing quite a bit of that, and I really enjoy it. I want to grow my culinary school. I have a culinary school that I started many, many years ago, and it grew very organically. I didn't really put much effort to it, but every cooking class I've had, people have loved it. So I think at some point in time, I want to get back to that. I want to bird watch with my grandsons. They love birds. They're one and a baby. I've got a 1.5-year-old and a baby. And they're wild about birds. And I want to travel more with my adventurous husband. We love traveling. And there's so much of the world to yet to see. So, yeah, that's my busy to-do list so far.
That sounds perfect. Thank you so, so much for speaking to me. I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been wonderful getting to know you better. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Kim.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Woman of the Future podcast. If you enjoyed it, please hit the subscribe button. And while you're there, why not give us a rating and review? You know you want to. For more about the Women of the Future Awards, network and initiative, please visit www.womenofthefuture.co.uk. See you soon!